Living Fiction. Northwestern University, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company, brings you a radio dramatization of another timeless story, A Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, another in a series of Living Fiction.
Don't pay any attention to what Lord Henry says, Dorian. He has a very bad influence over all his friends.
Have you a very bad influence, Lord Henry?
There is no such thing as a good influence, Mr. Gray. All influence is immoral.
Why?
Before Lord Henry answers that one, Dorian, get up on the platform. I want to finish the portrait today.
Very well, Basil.
Lord Henry, why is all influence immoral?
Because to influence a person is to give him one's own soul. He does not think his natural thoughts or burn with his natural passions. His virtues are not real. His sins are borrowed. He becomes an echo of someone else's music, an actor of a part that has not yet been written for him.
What do you suggest is a remedy, Henry?
Yield to yourself. The only way to get rid of temptation is to yield to it. Yes, cure the soul by means of the senses, and the senses by means of the soul.
Stop! You bewilder me. I don't know what to say.
Then let me say it for you, Dorian. The gods have been good to you. Beauty is the wonder of wonders. You have beauty. But what the gods give, they quickly take away. In time, you will become sallow and hollow-cheeked and dull-eyed. Realize your youth while you have it.
And how would you have me realize my youth?
Don't squander the gold of your days listening to the tedious, trying to improve the hopeless failure. These are the sickly aims, the false ideals of our age. Live the wonderful life that is in you. Let nothing be lost upon you. Always searching for new sensations. Be afraid of nothing.
Ah, finished. The portrait is finished.
My dear fellow, I congratulate you most warmly. It's the finest portrait of modern times. Dorian, come over and look at yourself.
So is it really finished? I've certainly looked...
Oh.
In time you will become sallow and hollow-cheeked and dull-eyed. Realize your youth while you have it.
Don't you like it?
Of course he likes it. Who wouldn't like it?
How sad it is. I shall grow old and horrible and dreadful. This picture will always remain young. It will never be older than this day in June. If it were only the other way. If it were I who was always to be young and the picture that was to grow old. For that... I would give everything. There's nothing I would not give. I would give my soul for that.
Love. Who are you in love with?
With an actress.
That's rather commonplace, don't you think?
You would not say so if you saw her, Lord Henry.
Who is she?
Her name is Sybil Vane.
Never heard of her.
No one has. People will someday, however. She's a genius.
My dear boy, no woman is a genius. Women are a decorative sex. They never have anything to say, but they say it so charmingly.
Oh, Lord Henry, your views bewilder me.
Never mind that. How long have you known her?
About 3 weeks. I found her in an absurd little theater with great flaring gas jets and gaudy playbills. And what do you imagine the play was?
I can't imagine.
Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, how awful.
Well, I must admit that I, too, was rather annoyed at the idea of seeing Shakespeare done in such a wretched hole of a place, but that was until I saw Juliet. She was the loveliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
But when did you meet Sybil?
Oh, the third night. She'd been playing Rosalind. I couldn't help going backstage. She was so shy and gentle. And her eyes opened wide when I told her what I thought of her performance. And before I could introduce myself, she said quite naively, "You look like a prince. I must call you Prince Charming."
Miss Sybil certainly knows how to pay compliments.
No, you don't understand her, Lord Henry. She regards me merely as a person in a play. She knows nothing of life. You'll have to meet her.
If she has captivated you so thoroughly, I certainly shall.
I've been right, haven't I? To take my love out of poetry. To find my wife in Shakespeare's plays. Lips that Shakespeare taught to speak have whispered their secret in my ear. I've had the arms of Rosalind around me and kissed Juliet on the mouth.
My dear Dorian, she sounds quite complete.
Lord Henry, you, who knows all the secrets of life, tell me how to charm Sybil Vane to love me. I want to make Romeo jealous. I want the dead lovers of the world to hear our laughter and grow sad. I want the breath of our passion to stir their dust into consciousness, to wake their ashes into pain. Oh, Lord Henry, I worship her.
You're not listening to a word I'm saying, Jim Vane. Do say something.
What do you want me to say,
Sybil? That you'll not forget us when you go across the sea.
You are more likely to forget me than I am to forget you, Sybil.
Why, what do you mean, Jim?
You have a new friend, I hear. Who is he? Why have you not told me about him? He means you no good.
Stop, Jim. You mustn't say anything against him. I love him.
Why, you don't even know his name. Who is he? I have a right to know.
Well, I call him Prince Charming.
He is a gentleman.
A prince. What more do you want?
He wants to enslave you.
I shudder at the thought of being free.
If he ever does you any wrong, as sure as there is a God in heaven, I shall kill him.
Don't be so serious, Jim. I'm not going to quarrel with you. I know you'd never harm anyone I love, would you?
Not so long as you love him, I suppose.
I shall love him forever.
And he?
Forever, too.
He had better.
Thou knowest the mask of night is on my face. Else would a maiden blush to taint my speech for that which thou hast heard me speak tonight. No, I have no joy in this contrast tonight.
She's quite beautiful, Dorian, but she can't act. Let us go.
I'm going to sit the play through.
Like the lightning.
I'm awfully sorry I made you waste an evening.
Do let us go, Dorian. You must not stay here any longer. It's not good for one's morals to see bad acting. Besides, I don't suppose you will want your wife to act. So what does it matter if she plays Juliet like a wooden doll?
Go away, both of you. Can't you see my heart's break?
Badly I acted tonight, Prince Charming.
Horribly. It was dreadful. Are you ill? You have no idea how I suffered.
My darling, you should have understood. But you do understand, don't you?
Understand what?
Why I was so bad tonight. Why I shall always be bad. Why I shall never act well again.
You are ill, I suppose. When you're ill, you shouldn't act. You make yourself ridiculous. My friends were bored. I was bored.
Dorian. Before I knew you, acting was the one reality of my life. And tonight, for the first time, I saw through the hollowness and the sham and the silliness of the empty pageant in which I'd always played. The words I had to speak were unreal. They weren't the words I wanted to say. You had brought me something higher, something of which all art is but a reflection. You made me understand what love really is.
I don't understand. My friends were bored. I was bored.
Oh, I might mimic a passion that I do not feel. But I cannot mimic one that burns me like fire. Even if I could do it, it would be profane for me to play at being in love. Oh, Dorian. Dorian, you do understand now.
You killed my love. You've thrown it all away. You're shallow and stupid.
You're not serious, Dorian. You're acting.
Acting? I leave that to you. You do it so well.
Dorian, give me your hand. I didn't
Don't
know that
touch
was...
Touch me.
Don't leave me. Please, I couldn't bear it. Don't go away from me. My brother said that... No, never mind. No, he didn't mean it. He was in jest. Please, Dorian. Don't leave me. Please, don't leave me.
I'm going. I don't wish to be unkind, but I can't see you again.
Please.
You've disappointed me.
Oh.
I left the theater. There's always something ridiculous about the emotions of people one no longer loves. I'd forgotten Sybil. All I could see were the gaunt, black-shadowed archways and the evil-looking houses. Women with hoarse voices and harsh laughter mocked me. Drunkards reeling and cursing. Grotesque children huddled upon doorsteps. I forgot how long I walked. The sun was coming up as I walked home. I walked into the library. Perhaps the smell of books will help me forget the one perfect love. The love turned rancid by the simplicity of a girl, and the cool glibness of Lord Henry, and the blind fury of Prince John. My blind fury. I walked over to the window and pulled the sash. A solitary sunbeam filled the room. All I could see was the dust, which is always attracted by a single beam. The dust focusing on my portrait, the picture of Dorian Gray. Like a particle of dust tossed upon the light, I was drawn to myself, drawn to the picture. The picture! It was changed. The expression, there was a touch of cruelty in the mouth. No, oh no. No, the dust has distorted the mouth. It couldn't be. It. And then I remembered.
If it were I who was always to be young, and the picture that was to grow old, for that I would give everything. I would give myself for that.
The picture had changed.
My dear boy, I must see you. Let me in at once. I can't bear your shutting yourself up like this.
I'm so sorry for it all, Dorian. But you must not think too much about it. It is dreadful, but it was not your fault. Tell me, did you go backstage and see her after the play?
Yes.
I felt sure you had. Did you make a scene with her?
I was brutal, Lord Henry, perfectly brutal. But it's all right now. I'm not sorry for anything that's happened. It's taught me to know myself better.
Ah, Dorian, I'm so glad you take it in that way. I was afraid I would find you plunged in remorse.
No, I'm perfectly happy now. I know what conscience is. To begin with, it's the divinest thing in us. Now, don't sneer at me. I want to be good. I can't bear the idea of my soul being hideous.
A very charming artistic basis for ethics, Dorian. But how are you going to begin?
By marrying Sybil Vane.
Marrying Sybil Vane? My dear Dorian, I...
Yes, Henry, I know what you're going to say. Something about marriage, but don't say it. Sybil Vane is to be my wife.
Your wife? Dorian, didn't you get my letter? I wrote to you this morning and sent the note down.
Oh, your letter. Oh, yes, I remember. I haven't read it. I was afraid there might be something in it I wouldn't like. You cut life to pieces with your epigrams.
You know nothing, then.
What do you mean?
Dorian, my letter was to tell you that Sybil Vane is dead.
Lord Henry, this is terrible.
Yes, it is very tragic, of course, but you must not get yourself mixed up in it. She didn't know your name.
No, just my first name.
Good. You must come and dine with me, and afterwards we will go to the opera.
So I've murdered Sybil Vane. Murdered her as surely as I'd cut her little throat with a knife. Yet the roses are not less lovely for all that. The birds sing just as happily in my garden. And tonight I am to go to the opera with you. How extraordinarily dramatic life is. Lord Henry, why can't I feel this tragedy as much as I want to?
It's an interesting question. It often happens that the real tragedies of life occur in such an inartistic manner that they hurt us by their crude violence, their absolute incoherence, their absurd want of meaning. Someone has killed herself for your love. I wish that I had had such an experience. It would have made me in love with love for the rest of my life.
I was terribly cruel to her. You forget that.
I'm afraid that women appreciate cruelty more than anything else. They have wonderfully primitive instincts. But I think I found the key to it all.
What is it, Lord Henry?
You said to me that Sybil Vane represented all the heroines of romance, that she was Desdemona one night and Ophelia the other, that if she died as Juliet, she came to life as Imogen.
She'll never come to life again.
No, she will never come to life. The girl never really lived, and so she has never really died. To you, she was always a phantom that flitted through Shakespeare's plays. Mourn for Ophelia, if you like. Put ashes on your head because Cordelia was strangled. Cry out against heaven because Desdemona died. But don't waste your tears over Sybil Vane.
You've explained it to myself, Lord Henry. I felt all that you've said, but I could not express it. This has been a marvelous experience. I wonder if life has anything in store for me as marvelous.
Life has everything in store for you, Dorian. There is nothing that you, with your extraordinary good looks, will not be able to do.
I think I shall join you at the opera, Lord Henry. I feel too tired to eat anything. Oh, what is the number of your box? The years pass quickly when one is in search of pleasure. But it's funny. My friends, who hoped to move the gates of heaven by their drab respectability, grew sallow-cheeked and wrinkled, and I, who accompanied the devil on his earthly jaunts, stayed young. When winter came, I was still standing where the spring trembles on the verge of summer. People marveled and secretly envied my wonderful youth.
He never seems to grow old. Mother says he's old enough to be my grandfather, but he's so handsome and young.
Yes, I remember when Dorian Gray took me dancing.
Funny? Yes, very. For a while, people envied the youth of Dorian Gray. The picture of Dorian Gray, locked in a dust-laden closet, grew old. The picture grew loathsome. Lust shone in the eyes, the mouth crooked and sensual. And each time I returned from my revel with Satan, I was drawn irrevocably to the portrait. Each time it changed, it became more horrible. At first I was shocked, my soul rotting before my eyes, while the shell remained young for all the world to see. But shock passes. I tested my soul. What new sensations could be reflected on the gruesome visage that had become my soul through a childish whim uttered 20 years before?
If it were I who was always to be young, and the picture that was to grow old, for that, I would give everything. I would give my soul for that.
Oh, how the picture had changed.
Dorian.
What's it all about, Basil? I hope it's not about myself. I'm tired of myself tonight.
It is about yourself, and I must say it. I think it right that you should know that the most dreadful things are being said against you in London.
I don't want to know anything about them. I love scandals about other people, but scandals about myself don't interest me.
They don't have the charm of novelty.
They must interest you, Dorian. Every gentleman is interested in his good name. Mind you, I don't believe these rumors at all. At least, I can't believe them when I see you. Sin is a thing that writes itself across a man's face. It cannot be concealed. But you, Dorian, with your bright, innocent face and marvelous, untroubled youth, I can't believe anything against you.
Thank you, Basil. But I don't think you came here to compliment me. If you must talk of me, let it be sorted.
Why is your friendship so fatal to young men? There was that wretched boy in the guards who committed suicide. You were his friend. There was Sir Robert Ashton who had to leave England with a tarnished name. You and he were inseparable. What about Adrian Singleton and his dreadful end? What about the young Duke of Perth? What sort of life has he got now? What gentleman would associate
with? Stop, Basil. You're talking about things of which you know nothing. You have no right to speak.
One has a right to judge a man by the effect he has over his friends. Yours seems to lose all sense of honor, of goodness, of purity. You have filled them with a madness for pleasure. They have gone down into the depths. You led them there.
Take care, Basil. You go too far.
I thought I knew you, Dorian. Do I know? I wonder. Do I know you? Before I could answer that, I should have to see your soul.
What? To see my soul?
Yes, to see your soul. But only God can do that.
You shall see it yourself tonight. You chattered enough about corruption. Now you shall look on it face to face.
We started upstairs. Basil to see his masterpiece of art, and I to see my masterpiece of life.
Basil, I shall show you my soul. You shall see the thing you fancy only God can see.
This is blasphemy, Dorian. You must not say things like that. They're horrible.
You think so?
We turned to the right. I took out my key and fitted it in the lock.
So you think that it is only God who sees the soul, Basil? Draw that curtain back and you'll see mine.
You're mad, Dorian.
You won't? Then I'll do it myself.
Oh!
Here was a new sensation. The artist gazing at his work of art and wondering at the change. He was looking at his painting and at my soul. He was shocked.
What does this mean?
20 years ago, I made a wish. Perhaps you would call it a prayer.
I remember it. Oh, how well I remember it. No, it's impossible. The room is damp. Mildew has gotten into the canvas. I tell you, this thing is impossible.
What is impossible?
You told me you had destroyed the portrait.
I was wrong. It destroyed me.
I don't believe it is my picture.
Can't you see your ideal in it?
My ideal, as you call it.
As you called it.
There was nothing evil in it. You were to me such an ideal as I shall never meet again. This is the face of a satyr.
This is the face of my soul. Basil just stood there, staring at his picture. I knew what he was thinking. Through some strange quickening of inner life, the leprosies of sin were slowly eating the portrait away. His hand shook. He felt weak. He sat down, his back toward me, staring at the picture.
Pray, Dorian, pray. What is it one's taught to say in one's childhood? Lead us not into temptation. Forgive us our sins.
Then, if he wash away our for his picture and for my soul.
Let us say that together.
There was a knife on the table.
The prayer of your bride has
behind
been answered.
This would be a new sensation. How would the portrait reflect it? I walked to the table, picked up the knife. Basil was still muttering at his picture. I raised the knife slowly and let it fall quickly. I pulled it out and cut again and again and again. Basil was dead. His slumped figure with his eyes downward, pointing toward the picture. I looked up. How had it changed? And then I saw there was blood dripping from the lips. I left the house quickly and went down to the waterfront where a man can forget and be washed for the waves. I knocked on the door of a den by the sea. You here, Adrian?
Where else should I be? None of the chaps will speak to me now. I don't care. As long as one has this stuff, one doesn't want friends. I think I've had too many friends.
Who is that sailor in the corner? He's never been here before.
I don't know. He is not my friend.
Well, well, look who's here. Good evening, sir.
Don't talk to me.
Well, aren't we proud tonight?
Don't ever talk to me again.
There goes the devil's bargain.
Curse you! Don't call me that!
Prince Charming is what you like to be called, ain't it?
Hey, wait, wait. At last, Prince Charming.
What do you want?
Keep quiet. If you stir, I'll shoot you.
You're mad. What have I done to you?
You wrecked the life of Sybil Vane. And Sybil Vane was my sister. She killed herself, but her death is at your door. I swore I'd kill you in return. For years I've looked for you. No clue, no trace. I knew nothing of you, but the name she used to call you, Prince Charming. I heard it tonight. Make your peace with God, for tonight you are going to die.
No, I never knew her. I never heard of her. You're mad.
You'd better confess your sin, for as sure as I'm Jim Vane, you are going to die. Down on your knees. I'll give you 1 minute. 1 minute. That's all.
Stop. Stop. How long ago is it since your sister died? Quick, tell me.
20 years. What does that mean? Why do you ask me?
20 years. 20 years? Take me under the street lamp and look at my face.
Why, you can't be more than 22 years. My God. And I would have murdered you.
As I walk homeward, I hear voices. Voices that speak as if they were a secret. But hear it not. My secret is much too close. It cries to be heard. And yet, it is afraid of itself. Afraid that it will multiply upon itself. As it did when he saw it. A secret with blood on its lips. What will they say when they see it? What will people say?
Have you ever seen anything so awful?
No wonder he never seemed to age.
What are you talking about?
The picture, of course.
What picture?
Why, the picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes, the picture of Dorian Gray. The loathsome, vile, contemptuous picture. The picture whose friends are lust, jealousy, envy,
hate, duplicity. Fed on by lust, hate, jealousy, and envy. Fed on by its friends. Oh, how I hate the picture.
Burn it, trample it,
cut it to pieces.
Destroy it, destroy it.
Destroy it.
Yes, destroy it. Why didn't I think of it before? Destroy the mirror of my soul. Hurry, hurry, hurry home. Destroy it. Destroy it. Destroy it. Hurry. Up the stairs. The stairs. Now, turn to your right. Quickly. Hurry. Hurry. Destroy it. Destroy it. Now, the light. The light. Destroy it. Destroy. How? 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 The knife. The same knife. Turn it in the picture. Cut it. Cut it. Destroy it. The portrait. It looks the same as it did 20 years ago.
A Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde is another in a series of living fiction presented each week by Northwestern University in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company. The cast and directors were students of Northwestern University. Dorian Gray was played by Tam Spivey, Henry by Fred Posner, Basil by David Press, and Sybil by Nancy Kafestian. Others in the cast were Joe Gillis, Sue Goldberg, and Helen Caskey. The assistant director was Faith Kellogg. The director was Henry Truly. The entire production was under the supervision of John Cowan. This is Jim Hamilton speaking, and this is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.